Christopher, tell us how the rise in gasoline will change our lives for the better.
Sure. That moniker applies to the United States, and we need to make some changes here, as we were talking about earlier. Some of that goes back to gas taxes and whatnot, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of things that are going to change for the better as the price of gas goes up, and some of them are social, and some of them are something that you could call subjective. So some people may not agree with me, but there's a lot of weird things tied into the price of gas. For instance, the obesity rate. You wouldn't think that had a whole lot to do with the price of gas. But in fact, there's a professor at the University of North Carolina who found a direct correlation between the real price of gasoline in terms of absolute dollars compared with the obesity rate of America. And in fact,
they're not driving to fast food places.
Yeah, there's a lot of effects. Yeah. And, people, when the price of gas goes up, people drive less, which means, they're not sitting on their house, on their couch. They're going to work. They may be going to a train or a bus instead. But what happens when you go to a train or bus? Well, you have to get to the train station. Well, you're usually walking or riding a bike or something or taking a bus. And then you get off the train, you have to walk to work. So the average person actually walks a mile on each end of his day when he takes the train. Or the bus, for that matter. So there's a lot of things, and that's just one of them, that go into play here. And the other thing is, now we're talking about the explosion of the exurbs. And, the exurbian life is one that a lot of us lead. And what it comes down to right now is, and of course, the price of gas. And when the price of gas is lower, more people tend to live in these places. And the 1990s, of course, were when a lot of these places got built. And what were the 1990s marked by? Well, historically low gas prices. You had the all-time low in oil prices since World War II, when you talk about inflation-adjusted dollars, came in the 1990s. And that's when we built out a lot of these McMansions that are far from anything that you might care about. And what people tend to do when they live in these places is they get up in the morning, they roll out of bed, they go in the shower, they go down to the kitchen, they eat their breakfast, they walk into their garage, sit down in their car, drive to work, mm-hmm. stand up, walk to their desk, sit down. That's it. And that's life, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
There's no interim walking whatsoever. Maybe they go out to lunch. Well, they get in their car and they drive somewhere because most of the office parks they work at aren't near restaurants.
Do you find that when this happens, when the price goes up, people will generally, if they go to restaurants at all on weekends, they're not going to go far. They're going to stay close to their house?
I think that's probably true to some degree. I think people tend to eat as close as they can to their house anyway when they go out, for the most part. But there's definitely a lot of things tied up in that. But in fact, a sustained increase of a dollar per gallon, according to Professor Charles Quartermounch, equals a 10% dip in the nation's obesity rate. And, this is pure economics that he mined from the data.
So there's one positive effect, then.
Yeah, I mean, that's very positive. And, that's 9 million fewer people who are in clinically obese within America for a dollar more in gas prices. And, of course, when people are obese, they tend to cost the healthcare system more. So a dollar rise in gas prices also means $11 billion less that we've spent on healthcare. So when you start talking about $4, $5 gas, you're starting to talk about some pretty big dents in the healthcare issue.
What are some of the negatives of $5, $6 gasoline?
Well, I mean, we talked about it at the outset, is that it's something that right now is already included in life and the economics at $4 a gallon. Well, if we see $5 and $6, we get no added utility from that extra dollar or two,
no.
Zero. It's basically going out the window.
It's going to the oil companies.
Exactly. Well, it's going to the oil companies, but, a lot of that money is going overseas. 60% of it is going straight out the door, and we never see it again. It doesn't come back into the economy. It's a terrible, terrible effect.
It's gone.
It's just an utter tax that the government doesn't – it's not like the government gets to spend it and give it to a contractor that builds something. It's just gone.
Europe, cold winter. China using a lot of fuel. Are those two reasons steering the price of oil right now?
Well, what's steering the price of oil is of course the market in New York, and that is controlled to some degree day to day by speculators, but speculators are there for a reason, and they have priced in the economic recovery into the price of oil, and that's why it's $90. And if we continue on this path, it'll stay there, because that's naturally where the price is. The market's not as evil as people think. But yes, long term, the big forces at work, the real pressures on the price of oil, are expanding middle classes across the globe. And of course, there's no bigger expanding middle class than China. Put it this way. So in the United States, we've got about 750 cars on the roads for every 1,000 people, 750 vehicles on the roads for every 1,000 people. In China, what do you think the number is? If it's 750 to 1,000.
I would guess it's 1,000 to 1,000.
No, no, no. So we have 750 cars for every 1,000 people. How many do you think China has?
Oh.
They would have less, obviously.
Yeah, they have more people.
Yeah, more people and very few. You know, they have less cars. So anyway, so far. Yeah, exactly. So we have 750 cars per 1,000 people. China, they don't have 100. They don't have 50. They don't even have 20. They have four. Four cars for every 1,000 people. So, I mean, the disparity there is unbelievable. 750 cars per 1,000 people to four cars in China. So China has this giant growth curve ahead of them. Let's say China even gets to half our ratio.
That's still a huge market.
It's huge. By far the biggest. It's already the biggest auto market in the world, by the way. By far the biggest auto market in terms of new cars sold every year. So, but let's just say China gets to half our ratio of cars per 1,000 people on the road in total. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means actually adding two more United States worth of cars to the face of the earth. So it's like taking two more Americas and throwing them on the globe if China gets to even half our car ratio. And we're already, of course, the biggest oil user in the world. So, yeah, China has a big part in this future pressure on the price of gas. And, you know, there were a lot of the demand growth is coming from. It's, in fact, not coming from America and Europe. We're kind of flatlining as far as oil demand goes. And, in fact, you know, we're down a little bit. But China is eating up anything we go down and then some, and so is India. Another interesting statistic here is right now there's about 1 billion people on the globe living American-style lives like you and I lead.
And that will increase dramatically, won't it?
Right. By 2040, you're talking about 3 billion people living that kind of life. So it's going to triple in a matter of 30 years. You're going to go from 1 billion to 3 billion. And so that instead of 1 billion people standing with us at the energy spigot, there's going to be 3. But there's not going to be as much energy, most likely.
What's happening with Iraqi oil?
Nobody really knows, but that's not true. I mean,
maybe you might be right.
It's not really true. I mean, they're in fact making money. You know, what Iraq has to do is get more production online very quickly. But that, you know, that continues to be that country's sole source of revenue for the most part.